Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode on Thursday, August 27th, 2026, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. With 1,000% certainty, voters say candidates faked their donations to get public campaign cash. Supreme Court lifts block on Trump's mail-in ballot order for now. GOP leans into Trump's deportation agenda, but Arizona voters want fair treatment. Mays declines to prosecute Hobbs for Sunshine residential bribery accusations. And let's get started. We begin, of course, with election 2026. With 1,000% certainty, voters say candidates faked their donations to get public campaign cash. Three candidates topped $4.7 million in public funds using voters who say they never gave a dime. By Caitlin Sievers, August 25, 2026. At least six Arizona residents say three statewide candidates falsely use their names to qualify for more than $4.7 million in public campaign funding. I can tell you right now, with 1,000% certainty, that I did not make a single contribution, let alone three of them. Christopher Scott of Peoria told the Mirror, when asked about forms filed by candidates, showing he had donated $5 to each in order to help them qualify for Arizona's public campaign finance program. The campaigns of Green Party gubernatorial candidate Risa Lombardo and Secretary of State Dwayne Collier, along with Republican candidate for Governor Scott Neely, reported collecting clean elections qualifying contributions from nearly 4,000 of the same voters, including more than 2,600 who were listed as giving to all three. The duplicated contributions across multiple candidates account for nearly 75% of the voters listed as given qualifying contributions to the trio. Those $5 qualifying contributions are a requirement for candidates who wish to access public campaign financing. Every candidate participating in clean elections must gather a set number of the small dollar contributions. The exact number depends on what office the candidate is seeking, from voters to unlock the larger sums of money. The Mirror analyzed the contribution history of hundreds of the people who supposedly made those contributions, and the vast majority had never donated to any other candidate, according to the Arizona Secretary of State's campaign finance records. Six of the people whose names and addresses were submitted alongside $5 contributions to all three candidates told the Mirror that they didn't make the donations, even though what looked like their signatures, and in some cases their handwriting, were on the forms submitted to the Secretary of State's office. The Mirror attempted to contact more than 50 voters who reportedly gave qualifying contributions to all three candidates and found none who said the contributions listed in their name were legitimate. It is unclear where the money to qualify for clean elections funding came from if it didn't come from the voters listed on the campaign finance forms. Contribution slips submitted to the Secretary of State's office and obtained by the Mirror via public records requests showed that $5 contributions were made to all three candidates in Scott's name, alongside his home address, on January 11th. "Never in my life have I made a political contribution," Scott said. "The $5 contributions to Lombardo, Collier, and Neely are the only ones for Scott in state campaign finance records." He added that he never heard of any of Lombardo, Collier, or Neely until the Mirror contacted him about his supposed contributions. All of the voters who told the Mirror that their information was used for the donations said they remember signing a petition unrelated to any of the candidates in a grocery store or a marijuana dispensary parking lot or at a concert within the past year. "Wow, this is disappointing," Alicia Castro of Levine told the Mirror via an email. "I did not fill out these forms or sign them. I did sign a petition in 2025 in a Safeway parking lot, and I wish I could remember what the petition was for." She confirmed that the signature on the donation appeared to be hers, although she never signed any such form. Castro, whose information was used for $5 donations made to all three candidates on November 25, 2025, said that she had never donated to a political candidate. Campaign finance records back up that claim. Tom Collins, executive director of the Arizona Citizens Clean Elections Commission, told the Mirror that the commission was already aware of and actively investigating the suspect qualifying contributions. "If the Clean Elections Commission finds that a candidate violated state law or the commission's rules, it can decertify a candidate, suspend funding, order funding to be repaid, or impose a penalty of up to $5,000 for candidates for statewide office. But if investigators confirm that the Lombardo, Collier, and Neely campaigns use the information of registered voters to submit false $5 contributions, they could face consequences much bigger than repaying the campaign funding they received." Former Democratic Attorney General Terry Goddard told the Mirror that if it's confirmed that the campaign submitted hundreds or thousands of false $5 donation slips to the Secretary of State's office, the candidates, their campaign treasurers, and the people who gathered the contribution slips could face numerous felony fraud charges. "I find the possibility to be appalling because it means that, obviously, they have no respect for the clean elections process or for the truth," he said. "What they've done is reprehensible and should be prosecuted." The Arizona Secretary of State's office did not respond to repeated requests to explain technical aspects of the campaign finance system related to the Mirror's investigation, and also didn't respond to a request for comment about the allegedly fraudulent $5 contributions. The Arizona Attorney General's office did not respond to questions about the ramifications the candidates and their campaigns could face for submitting fraudulent contributions to qualify for clean elections funding, except to say that fraud is a Class 4 felony. Several of the voters who told the Mirror that their information was used fraudulently expressed anger and concern at seeing their signatures on forms that they were adamant they did not sign. "That is my information. However, I absolutely did not make those donations," Claudia Sucha of Phoenix told the Mirror in an email. "I don't support either one of those parties." Sucha, whose information was used on contribution slips dated November 15, 2025, for all three candidates, said she would be wary in the future of signing any petitions because of this experience. "I am not happy about this," she said. "It's very disconcerting to know that my information was misused and how easily I was misled." She added that she would never support a Republican candidate for governor. "I have been a Democrat since I started voting at 18, and the only Republican that I have ever supported was John McCain," Sucha said. Neither Lombardo nor Collier responded to multiple messages asking for comment on the donations. Neely told the Mirror that he didn't know anything about any false donations, and that the people who recruited him to run for office had also volunteered to collect the $5 donations on his behalf. Neely refused to identify those people, however, and said he was unaware that the same people who are recorded as collecting donations on his behalf also collected donations for Collier. The same four people are in the record as collecting the majority of $5 contributions for Neely and Collier. Lombardo was listed as collecting all of her qualifying contributions. In some cases, contributions in Neely's name were submitted for Collier and vice versa, the Mirror found, when reviewing copies of the $5 contribution slips. Clean elections candidates are barred from paying people to collect $5 donations, making it unlikely that the same people would volunteer to collect donations for candidates from different parties. The Clean Elections Act, which established Arizona's public campaign funding system, was approved by voters in 1998. Candidates who opt to participate agreed to forego large donations and money from PACs in exchange for a fixed amount of public funding based on the office they seek. In 2026, Clean Elections candidates for governor were required to collect $4,000 of the $5 qualifying contributions from registered Arizona voters. Candidates for Secretary of State were required to collect $2,500. Lombardo, Collier, and Neely all submitted more than the required amount of qualifying contribution slips. The Secretary of State's office and the county recorders where the contributing voters were registered reviewed samples of the contribution slips submitted by Lombardo and Collier, while Neely's contributions were sent to the county recorders for a full review. Public funding was ultimately released to all three of them. Lombardo and Neely both received more than $1.1 million apiece to campaign for the primary election, while Collier received more than $295,000. After Lombardo and Collier won their primaries, they received more than $1.7 million and $443,000, respectively, in public funding to campaign for the November election. Neely lost the primary to Andy Biggs, so he didn't receive general election funding. The Arizona Green Party has said Lombardo and Collier are, quote, sham candidates who are Republicans in disguise that are co-opting the Green Party name in order to aid Biggs by leeching progressive votes from Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs. Lombardo and Collier have both worked with businesses and people who are part of Arizona's Republican campaign machine, including Uncle Sam Petitions and attorney Tim Lasota, who both also did work this year for Neely's campaign. Collier is a former employee of Uncle Sam Petitions. Lombardo was a Republican precinct committee woman, an elected position that is typically held by people who are highly involved in partisan politics, until 5 days before she filed a statement of interest to run for governor as a Green Party candidate. Lombardo told the Mirror in an April email that she'd been a Democrat most of her life, but that she'd been registered with both parties and her ex-husband was a Republican. The Mirror could find no records that Risa Lombardo and her husband, Michael Lombardo, a member of the Maricopa County Republican Committee's ultra-grassroots team, had divorced. The ultra-grassroots website describes Michael Lombardo as a dedicated Republican activist focused on grassroots organizing, election integrity, and party engagement. As of May, both Lombardos shared an address and lot number at a North Phoenix mobile home park. Over a 5-week period ahead of the primary election, Lombardo and Collier paid more than $1.2 million in public funds to Bootstrap Campaigns, a shadowy Nevada business that was incorporated by GOP political operatives on May 12th. Lombardo made her first payment to the business on June 4th. The business has no online footprint and hasn't received payments from any other Arizona, Nevada, or federal candidates. When the company was created, a man named David Wilson was its president, secretary, and director, and Brian McPartland was its treasurer. But 10 days later, corporate documents were amended to list a man named Christopher Silva as holding all four offices. The company has no website, and attempts to identify Silva were unsuccessful. Wilson and McPartland are two experienced Republican political campaign consultants who have worked together in California. Lombardo and Collier paid the Nevada business for a wide range of services, including consulting, mailers, text messages to voters, flyers, photography, video production, radio production, canvassing, social media management, petition gathering, and sign printing and installation. The Clean Elections Commission requires candidates who use its money to run for office to identify the people and entities they pay by name and street address, including for subcontractors, even if those subcontractors are paid through another vendor. The Mirror found that Collier and Lombardo's campaigns both used other businesses, including Uncle Sam Petitions and O'Neill Printing, for campaign work, but didn't list either business in their campaign finance reports. Goddard told the Mirror that he found the possibility of these candidates falsely using voter information and signatures to receive millions in public campaign funds to be outrageous and angering. "Obviously, you've got criminal activities if it's proven," he said. "You also have just despicable fraud on the clean election system. I mean, if people can get away with this, it makes the whole system look like it's not working. So I think you've got an additional public policy issue here that's pretty important." And that concludes this first story. With 1,000% certainty, voters say candidates faked their donations to get public campaign cash. Next, we have a national election story with local implications. Supreme Court lifts block on Trump's mail-in ballot order for now. The majority said a lower court's pause was causing irreparable harm as the First Circuit takes up the case. By Ashley Murray, August 24, 2026. With just over 2 months until the November midterms, the U.S. Supreme Court gave way Monday for President Donald Trump to have a hand in regulating mail-in ballots nationwide, a voting method he has falsely claimed is rife with corruption since he lost the 2020 presidential election. In an unsigned emergency docket opinion, the court's conservative majority wrote the Trump administration is likely to prevail on its argument that 23 Democratic-led states do not have standing to stop his executive order to change how the U.S. Postal Service processes mail-in ballots. The majority justices also wrote that a lower court's injunction is causing irreparable harm, but left open the possibility that the executive order could still be considered unconstitutional. The court's disposition of this application does not mean that any measure taken by the government to implement the order will necessarily be lawful. On that score, time will tell, the majority wrote. The legality of a Massachusetts federal district court order, which paused the executive order to overhaul vote-by-mail systems before the November 3rd midterms, will now be decided by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit. Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson dissented. In a lengthy dissent, Jackson wrote the ruling needlessly injects chaos and uncertainty into the upcoming midterm elections. The principle of courts not altering voting systems too close to the elections has been eroded, she said, amounting to a Kafkaesque nightmare. States administering elections and the voting public that relies on them to do so deserve clarity, not caginess or confusion, she wrote. Final rule issued. The March 31 executive order at the heart of the case in part, directs USPS to direct the redesign of mail-in ballot envelopes, including adding a unique barcode. It also asks USPS to collect voters' names and addresses from state elections officials and directs the U.S. Justice Department to investigate and prosecute state officials who violate the order. The Postal Service issued a final rule Friday detailing how the process would be carried out. Whether an overhaul of mail-in ballots for each state could be completed in time for the November 3rd election remains to be seen, as vote-by-mail documents are sent to voters well in advance of Election Day. A federal district judge in Massachusetts chastised the Trump administration for sowing confusion and creating an emergency by noticing a rule Friday that the U.S. Postal Service will eventually require federally regulated mail-in ballot voting envelopes and state data. A 95-page notice alerting that the final rule would appear in the Federal Register on August 26th outlined justifications for federal requirements on states to redesign ballot envelopes and provide a list of recipient names and addresses to USPS. The final rule became effective Friday, according to the document. The final rule runs contrary to the U.S. District Judge Indira Talwani's August 11th preliminary injunction, barring the federal government from changing states' mail-in voting rules prior to the November 3rd midterm elections, the judge wrote in a brief order on the docket Sunday. Defendants did not file an appeal and did not seek, let alone obtain, a stay of the preliminary injunction, Talwani wrote. Nonetheless, on August 21, 2026, USPS issued its final rule with an anticipated publication date in the Federal Register of August 26, 2026. Talwani was appointed to the bench by President Barack Obama in 2013 and unanimously confirmed by the Senate the following year. Effective date delayed. The rule includes a provision that it will not be in effect for this year's midterm elections if Talwani's injunction is still in place, but the judge said it would still create significant confusion for voters. The Trump administration asserted the rule would have no effect on the rules themselves while the injunctions are in place, while ignoring the confusion that the publication will engender, Talwani wrote. It's unclear what effect the final rule will have on the active litigation on the issue. The federal government had appealed Talwani's injunction because, it argued, Trump's order could not be challenged until an agency published a final rule. Groups want quick order. The voting rights advocacy groups, led by the League of Women Voters of Massachusetts, who sued President Donald Trump and administration officials over a March executive order overhauling mail-in voting procedures, swiftly filed an emergency motion Saturday. They urged Talwani to quickly enforce her injunction and to order expedited responses from the administration, citing immediate, ongoing, irreparable harm caused by defendants' violation of the preliminary injunction and in light of these fast-approaching dates. There are now only 73 days before the November 2026 election, and far fewer before mail ballots begin to go out, they wrote. The Trump administration appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court in late July a similar district court ruling against its mail-in voting restrictions order in a case brought by nearly two dozen Democrat-led states. The states argued that the federal government has no constitutional role in election administration, that the executive order unfairly limited vote by mail, which some states use exclusively, and that an overhaul of ballot requirements this close to an election was unworkable. High Court Appeal. In a supplemental brief filed to the Supreme Court justices Monday, U.S. Solicitor General D. John Sauer said the USPS rule issuance underscores the need for relief from the district court's improper, unripe injunction. The Postal Service's final rule imposes only modest requirements for preparation and envelope design for federal mail ballot, requirements that fall well within its traditional authorities to impose mailing standards for particularly sensitive types of mail, wrote Sauer, who formerly worked as Trump's personal defense attorney. Democratic officials in 23 states, California, Massachusetts, Nevada, Washington, Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, and the District of Columbia brought the suit challenging the executive order. 12 states with Republican attorneys general, Alabama, Missouri, Florida, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Montana, Nebraska, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Texas joined the appeal to the Supreme Court on the federal government's side. And we have a sidebar from the Arizona Mirror called the Arizona Angle. Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes said that the Supreme Court's order doesn't change anything for how Arizona voters will be able to vote by mail in November. You can still vote by mail in Arizona. Our election officials are preparing for the election, and voters should continue making their plans to participate just as they normally would, Fontes, a Democrat, said in a written statement, noting that litigation over the constitutionality of Trump's executive order is ongoing. There is going to be a lot of noise around this issue, he added. Don't let rumors determine how you participate in our elections. Get your information from trusted sources. And if you vote by mail, receive it, vote it, and return it. And that concludes this story. Supreme Court lifts block on Trump's mail-in ballot order for now. Continuing with election 2026, GOP leans into Trump's deportation agenda, but Arizona voters want fair treatment. 86% want a clearer path to citizenship, and few are comfortable with legal immigrants being targeted for deportation. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, August 24, 2026. While Republican candidates are leaning into harsh anti-immigrant rhetoric and aligning themselves with Trump's mass deportation campaign to attract voters ahead of November's midterms, a recent survey shows that most Arizonans prefer an immigration enforcement strategy that emphasizes fair treatment and an easier path to earning citizenship. The economy and affordability are top of mind for voters, but the shadow of immigration enforcement looms large following months of aggressive crackdowns across the country and the fatal shootings of two citizens by federal immigration agents in January. November's election is expected to be the first political test of the Trump administration's violent immigration agenda. In Arizona, voters will choose which party will helm the state for the next 4 years, deciding between candidates who hold starkly different positions on the federal government's approach to immigration enforcement. And research indicates that hostility to immigrants doesn't resonate with Arizona voters. The 2026 Arizona Voters Agenda by the nonprofit Center for the Future of Arizona found that an overwhelming majority of voters across the political spectrum want there to be improved access to citizenship for certain immigrants. As much as 86% of voters who are planning to participate in Arizona's November election, including 75% of Republicans, said the federal government should create a clearer and easier legal pathway to citizenship for immigrants who meet established requirements. Arizona voters also appear to disagree with efforts to expand which immigrants are eligible for removal, a tactic that the Trump administration has increasingly turned to in a bid to raise deportation numbers. Three-fourths of voters in the Grand Canyon state, including 57% of those who identified as Republican, said they support the enforcement of federal immigration laws, but emphasized that immigrants already in the country with legal permission should be treated fairly and respectfully. And we're going to stop here to remind you that you're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. And now returning to our article, few Arizonans said they agreed with strategies that undermine respectful treatment in the name of immigration enforcement. Only 21% of voters reported being comfortable with the possibility of legal immigrants enduring scrutiny or greater restrictions for the sake of implementing federal immigration enforcement goals. Even among Republican respondents, support for enforcement actions that led to the mistreatment of immigrants with legal status was low, at just 36%. In a written statement, the Center for the Future of Arizona noted that the survey demonstrates that Arizona voters don't see immigration enforcement or border security as either-or issues. Across several major policy questions, they support approaches that combine security, functionality, legal pathways, enforcement, and fair treatment. At the same time, more restrictive alternatives do not earn the same level of agreement across the electorate, reads the statement. In November, those priorities may come into play as immigration enforcement and border security are on the ballot in Arizona. Voters will decide whether drug cartels should be labeled terrorist organizations. If passed, Proposition 317 would direct the Arizona Department of Homeland Security to do everything in its power to defend against that threat, and it sets the stage for a future governor to send the National Guard to patrol the state's southern border. Arizonans also will pick who will take on the state's top leadership positions for the next 4 years, each of which exerts significant influence over how much the state participates in the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. Governor Katie Hobbs, a Democrat who has resisted efforts from the GOP-controlled legislature to facilitate Trump's mass deportation campaign, and prefers instead to award funding grants to border officials, will face off against U.S. Representative Andy Biggs, a vocal proponent of Trump's agenda, who once proposed federal legislation that would have publicized the identities and locations of immigrants with deportation orders, in a bid to turn the public and law enforcement agencies into a national manhunt. The race to win the state attorney general's seat is similarly marked by federal immigration enforcement efforts. Democrat Chris Mays is hoping voters will award her another term and has touted her lawsuit against Trump's executive order attempting to end birthright citizenship for the children of immigrants and her support for immigrants who arrived in the country as minors as proof that she is the right choice to represent the state in court. Mays' opponent, Representative State Senator Warren Peterson, meanwhile, helped craft a 2024 law that gives the state the power to jail migrants who cross the border anywhere but at an official port of entry, and vowed to help the Trump administration deport immigrants, including those who were awarded a temporary shield against removal under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. That concludes this story. GOP leans into Trump's deportation agenda, but Arizona voters want fair treatment. Our next story is actually an update on one that we read earlier in this program. Clean Elections set to demand $4.7 million repayment from candidates amid fraud allegations. Director Tom Collins said his findings corroborate the Mirror's reporting on fake $5 contributions, by Caitlin Sievers, August 25th, 2026. The Arizona Citizens Clean Elections Commission is set on Thursday to discuss accusations that three candidates unlawfully qualified for $4.7 million in public funds and broke campaign finance rules, and it may ask them to repay the money. In letters sent Tuesday to Green Party candidate for governor Risa Lombardo, Green Party candidate for Secretary of State Duane Collier, and Republican candidate for Governor Scott Neely, Clean Elections Commission Executive Director Tom Collins told each of the candidates to seek legal counsel and to expect to be required to repay the money. In the letters, he detailed allegations of false contributions to their campaigns and failures to adhere to the Clean Elections campaign finance reporting requirements. All of these facts together, which, as you can see, are largely substantiated, represent a level of suspicious activity well beyond what I have witnessed in 16 years as the Commission's executive director, Collins wrote. Those letters were sent on the same day that the Arizona Mirror published a story detailing accusations from six Arizona residents that the three candidates falsely used the voters' names on small-dollar contributions to qualify for millions in public campaign funding. Those $5 contributions are a requirement for candidates who wish to access public campaign financing. Every candidate participating in Clean Elections must gather a set number of the small-dollar contributions from voters. The exact number depends on what office the candidate is seeking to unlock the larger sums of money. In the letters, Collins describes that what he found during a months-long investigation into the campaign finance records of the three candidates confirms the Mirror's reporting, which he referenced in the letters. The Arizona Mirror made blistering assertions that, frankly, corroborate my investigation thus far, Collins wrote in the letters. In line with the Mirror's reporting, Collins wrote that Clean Elections staff found that a substantial number of $5 contributions recorded for Lombardo, Neely, and Collier came from the same people on the same dates and were the only contributions those people had ever made. Based on my experience as executive director, this represents a suspicious pattern of donations, Collins wrote. To qualify for public funding, the candidates must write a check for the total of $5 contributions they collected to the Clean Elections Commission, alongside paperwork with the names, addresses, and signatures of the voters who made the donations. Through reviews of all three campaign bank accounts, Collins wrote that he found that they all deposited lump sums in the amounts equal to the total of their reported $5 donations in May, on the same dates or shortly before they applied for Clean Elections funds, instead of over the course of the many months each candidate claimed to have been collecting the qualifying contributions. Presumably, if you had been collecting $5 from individuals over the course of the qualifying period, there is no reason for those donations to arrive in the form of a single in-person bank counter deposit, Collins wrote in his letter to Lombardo. All of this activity is highly unusual and constitutes strong evidence that you, in fact, did not collect $5 from each person who apparently signed a qualifying contribution form for your candidacy. And in turn, this gives rise to an inference the source of money was the deposit on May 4th, not actual individual donors. Lombardo and Neely both received the lump sum payment on May 4th, and Collier received his on May 29th, according to the letter. Lombardo and Collier both applied for public funding on the same day the deposits were made, and Neely applied a week after receiving his. Collins also referenced the Arizona Green Party's opposition to Lombardo and Collier's campaigns, accusing them of being Republicans in disguise, aimed at pulling votes from Governor Katie Hobbs in the general election to benefit Republican gubernatorial hopeful Congressman Andy Biggs. Collier wrote that party support is typically crucial to successfully collect enough qualifying contributions to receive public funding. In the letters, Collins told Neely, Lombardo, and Collier that he planned to advise the members of the Clean Elections Commission during its Thursday meeting to initiate proceedings to impose a repayment order upon you, requiring that they all repay the public funding distributed to their campaigns. If the commission votes to do so, Lombardo could have to repay up to $2.8 million. Collier would be on the hook for more than $739,000, and Neely would have to pay more than $1.1 million. Collier and Lombardo both received public funding for both their primary and general election campaigns, but Neely only received funding for the primary that he lost to Biggs. Clean elections rules require that any repayments can only come from the candidate's personal funds, money remaining in their campaign account, or money their campaign raises under the strict dollar limits imposed by the public campaign finance system. Neely told the Mirror that he didn't know anything about the falsely obtained $5 donations. Neither Lombardo nor Collier have responded to multiple requests for comments. In addition to accusations of falsifying $5 contributions, Collins told Lombardo and Collier that they were also suspected of violating Clean Elections reporting requirements when they failed to list subcontractors that their campaign used, as the Mirror reported last month. Collins pointed out that Lombardo and Collier both made large payments to Las Vegas-based bootstrap campaigns for a wide range of services just weeks after the business was created. Most campaign shops subcontract a significant amount of work, and a new out-of-state company would naturally use sub-vendors, especially local companies, whose work would require documentation, Collins wrote. And so it is with Bootstrap. For example, you attribute mailers to Bootstrap when records filed with our office show O'Neill Printing in Phoenix did those jobs. Additionally, Collins informed Lombardo that she submitted too few qualifying contributions to qualify for public funding in the first place. The Secretary of State's office, alongside the county recorders, are responsible for verifying the contributions and approving candidates for clean elections funding. The Secretary of State's office did not answer questions from the Mirror about the calculations used to certify Lombardo's campaign for public funding. At the close of the letters, Collins advised Lombardo, Collier, and Neely to retain any records that might be used as evidence in any action taken against them, and that those records may be subpoenaed and that they may be compelled to testify in front of the commission. And that concludes this updated story, Clean Elections Set to Demand $4.7 Million Repayment from Candidates Amid Fraud Allegations. Our next story, Mays declines to prosecute Hobbs for Sunshine Residential bribery accusations, by Gloria Rebecca Gomez, August 21, 2026. Attorney General Chris Mays says there's no evidence that Governor Katie Hobbs broke the law when her administration awarded a pay increase to a foster care provider that donated more than $400,000 to her political campaign. 2 years ago, an Arizona Republic investigation found that Sunshine Residential Homes received a nearly 60% increase in the rate it charges to house foster children. The company made hundreds of thousands in campaign contributions to Hobbs' 2022 gubernatorial run, and its CEO, Simon Kotor, was on the Democrats' inaugural committee. The report prompted Republican lawmakers to petition Mays to conduct an investigation for potential bribery, and has been a political thorn for Hobbs since. But on Friday, Mays released a report absolving Hobbs of any blame. Mays concluded that there isn't enough evidence to link the donations to the hike in rate increases and said she would decline to prosecute Hobbs. Doing so, she said, would only open up the state to an anti-SLAPP case because campaign contributions are protected by the First Amendment, and Republicans have frequently used the allegations against Hobbs as a political talking point. After 2 years of investigation, consisting of multiple interviews, reviews of campaign finance records, procurement records, bank documents, and state emails and chats totaling over 1 terabyte of data, including more than 100,000 documents, the investigation has not uncovered any evidence of the necessary quid pro quo to support a bribery charge, Mays said in a written statement. Instead, Mays called on the Arizona legislature to pass laws to make political donations from state contractors more transparent. Mays' investigation also revealed that another $150,000 that Sunshine Residential donated to a legal fund set up by Hobbs to pay for election challenges from her Republican opponent, Carrie Lake. In a statement posted to the social media site X, Christian Slater, a spokesman for Hobbs, said the report confirms that Hobbs has always had the state's best interests in mind. The report released today clearly states that there was no wrongdoing by the governor or her office, Slater wrote. As has been publicly reported multiple times, and the Attorney General's report now confirms, Governor Hobbs was not involved in, did not direct, and did not instruct any member of her administration regarding the rate increases the Department of Child Services approved. Governor Hobbs always puts Arizona first, and that's why she's focused on lowering costs, securing the border, and delivering results for Arizona's families. Republicans, meanwhile, accused Mays of protecting her political ally. State Senator Warren Peterson, a Republican who was hoping to unseat Mays in November, said her failure to charge Hobbs is proof that voters should award him the Attorney General's seat. After dragging her feet on the pay-to-play allegations against her Democratic pal, Chris Mays announced her refusal to hold Governor Katie Hobbs accountable for her actions, Peterson said in a written statement. Once again, Mays has proven herself unfit to lead the Arizona Attorney General's office, putting politics ahead of enforcing the law. Republican Congressman Andy Biggs, who is challenging Hobbs for the chance to lead the state for the next 4 years, lambasted the report as a cover-up. Biggs highlighted Hobbs' refusal to sit down with investigators as proof that she is guilty and called on voters to respond by ousting her and Mays in the fall. With today's report, whitewashing obvious corruption, Arizonans can see why Democrat Katie Hobbs thinks she's above the law, he wrote. The best way for Arizonans to now push back against this embarrassment is clear: voting Katie Hobbs and Chris Mays out of office in November. The report emphasized that while Sunshine Residential held the most lucrative state contract among over 100 providers during Hobbs' tenure, the rate at which its contract increased was outpaced by two other providers. The Arizona Department of Child Safety pays providers rates based on the number of beds available for children on a daily basis. Sunshine Residential, which is the largest provider DCS works with, has consistently commanded high pay rates, even before Hobbs took office. In 2019, the group home provider's pay rate was exceeded by only two other providers. By 2024, a little over a year into Hobbs' tenure, Sunshine Residential's pay rate jumped by 56%. To the highest pay rate in Arizona at $234 per bed. Two other providers saw greater pay increases of up to 85%, but still had lower per bed pay rates. The bribery allegations stem from two pay rate increases made under Hobbs, one of which was awarded mid-contract and another that occurred during a contract renewal. During interviews with David Lujan, who was then head of DCS, the mid-contract increase was justified as necessary to keep Sunshine Residential as a provider amid threats that it would instead turn to a better-paying federal offer. Lujan told investigators that two providers had already shifted to federal contracts and that Sunshine Residential was particularly valuable because it was one of the few providers willing to take on siblings. Lujan said he never once received an indication from the governor's office that he should increase the group home's pay rates, and added that he only notified Hobbs' office of the increase after it was approved. But at least one DCS employee felt pressured by the donations to Hobbs' gubernatorial campaign. The assistant director, Robert Navarro, one of two employees who advised Lujan to approve the mid-contract pay increase, told investigators that the campaign contributions put pressure on, I think, everybody. Navarro mentioned the donations during a meeting with Lujan before a new contract with Sunshine Residential was completed, and also spoke about them in an employee chat with another employee who characterized those discussions as nothing more than banter between friends. Ultimately, investigators concluded that the pressure Navarro talked about was self-imposed. Lujan and employees denied ever receiving directions from Hobbs' office to increase the pay rates for Sunshine Residential. And Hobbs herself, who declined to be interviewed, said through attorneys that she never discussed pay raise with Couture and was unaware of the pay increase while it was happening. Investigators posited that the pay rate hike had more to do with Sunshine's residential outsized leverage as the largest provider for DCS than any pay-to-play scheme. In the end, Mays wrote, there simply isn't any evidence to suggest that Hobbs agreed to a bribe in exchange for a more lucrative contract. Certainly, the timing of Sunshine's large political contributions, followed by Sunshine's rate increases, including receiving the highest per-day rate, raised serious questions that prompted this investigation, Mays wrote. But in the absence of any evidence to suggest a quid pro quo, it is insufficient to establish a crime occurred. Mays noted that charging Hobbs with bribery would only lead to the case being thrown out of court. That's because Arizona's bribery laws require clear evidence that a payment was made in exchange for an explicit promise, and the courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, have ruled that it isn't enough to theorize that there's a link between a donation and an action later taken by a state official. Mays added that prosecuting the case would likely prove difficult because there's plenty of evidence for Hobbs and Sunshine Residential to counter with an anti-SLAPP defense. Arizona law empowers people to defend themselves against lawsuits intended to deter, retaliate against, or prevent a person from exercising their constitutional rights, including the right to make a political donation as a form of free speech. Mays pointed out that Republican lawmakers, along with petitioning her office to open an investigation, also promised investigations at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office and with a St. Louis-based law firm with ties to President Donald Trump. On top of that, Republican critics of Hobbs have repeatedly referred to the bribery investigation in political ads in an effort to turn voters against her. This isn't the first time the state attorney general has been asked to look into allegations of political bribery and declined to pursue a lawsuit, Mays pointed out. In 2020, another Arizona Republic report exposed a trend from the Republican Governor Doug Ducey, whose administration awarded public contracts to companies friendly with Ducey and later donated to his political campaign. The Attorney General's office at the time under Republican Mark Bronovich's leadership ultimately concluded that the contracts were perfectly legal and there was no wrongdoing at play. In her report on Hobbs' alleged bribery, Mays said it would be difficult to explain to a court how the case against Sunshine Residential was different from the ones that were never pursued against Ducey. And that concludes this story. Mays declines to prosecute Hobbs for Sunshine Residential bribery accusations. And finally, all hands on deck for immigration, gutted fentanyl investigations report says. One field office spent 99% of its work on immigration, leaving almost no capacity for drug cases. By Ariana Figueroa, August 21, 2026. Fentanyl seizures decreased by 39% during the first year of the second Trump administration, after U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement shifted the Department of Homeland Security's criminal investigations arm to conducting immigration enforcement, according to a report government investigators published Friday. Agents with Homeland Security Investigations, a sub-agency of DHS's Immigration and Customs Enforcement, reported an, quote, all-hands-on-deck environment toward immigration enforcement began in January 2025, according to the DHS Office of Inspector General report. With ICE dedicating more staff hours to immigration investigation, staffing hours for fentanyl investigations declined, the report said. The report found that the hours dedicated to fentanyl investigations for fiscal 2025 declined by more than 250,000 hours, or 31%, compared to fiscal 2024. At the same time, immigration enforcement saw the largest increase across all investigative categories, rising more than 1.7 million hours, over 800%, according to the report. Inspectors interviewed more than 100 agencies from 11 HSI field offices for this report. At one HSI office, approximately 99% of work was dedicated to immigration, leaving almost no capacity for fentanyl investigations, the watchdog found. A drug investigation team of 7 agents was reduced to about 3, and the rest of the personnel was reassigned to work on immigration cases, according to the report. And we're going to have to leave it there because that's all the time we have for this August 27th, 2026 edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on Demand Podcasts. And remember, you can take Sun Sounds with you by using our Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. And don't forget to spread the word to your friends and neighbors that anyone who is unable to read print for any reason can find lots of great programming on Sun Sounds 24/7. Have them check us out at sunsounds.org. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to having you join us next week.